From Jeanette to Jersey Shore, Latrobe to Bloomsburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives has been in session for only 38 days this year, as partisan gridlock has gripped the chamber. House Republican leader Brian Cutler is here to explain what must happen to get the House back to business. Concern for Kids offers hope and opportunity to a wide range of children, including foster care and adoption services. Joe Geiger has Gordon May of Hope for Kids in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And state regulations are preventing Pennsylvanians from customizing their health care and have led to a shortage of medical providers. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Brian Cutler in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Democrats regained their one-seat majority in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives as Lindsey Powell easily won a special election this past week to fill a vacant seat in Allegheny County. The district is heavily Democrat, so Powell's victory was expected. The seat became vacant over the summer when Sarah Inamorato resigned after winning the Democratic nomination for Allegheny County Executive. The State House has sat in recess since the first week of July with a 101-101 deadlock, but is scheduled to return to session this coming week. Key components of the state budget remain unresolved due to the lengthy recess. In the week's other major political development, David McCormick, who narrowly lost the Republican primary for U.S. Senate in 2022 to Dr. Mehmet Oz, has announced he will challenge incumbent Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. for his seat next year. This time, McCormick, a West Point graduate and military veteran, will have a clear path to the Republican nomination. The race is expected to be one of the most highly competitive U.S. Senate elections in the nation next year, as Democrats have seen their statewide voter registration majority substantially reduced in recent years. Governor Josh Shapiro has triggered a battle with legislative Republicans after unilaterally implementing an automatic voter registration program. Election laws are set by the legislature, and the violation of the separation of powers triggered immediate condemnation from Republican leaders in both the House and Senate. Such excursions into legislative powers by governors have become routine in recent years, often triggering legal challenges, which end up before the state Supreme Court. The court itself has also tended to legislate from the bench. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. During his first 6 months in office, Governor Josh Shapiro has signed into law the fewest number of bills by any governor in the last half century. That is because gridlock in the almost evenly divided State House of Representatives has produced very little actual legislation. Brian Cutler represents the 100th Legislative District based in Lancaster County. He is a former House Speaker who now serves as Republican leader. He joins us now to discuss the problem. Brian, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Brian, when we look at the House of Representatives, it's been narrowly, nominally under Democrat control or an even split here now since the beginning of the session. There's been very little productivity. Very few bills have been passed. What's happening here? Why is there no longer a regular order to business?
One of the struggles with such a closely matched House with seats at 102 Democrats, 101 Republicans, is that every time that you have a vacancy, and we've had several this session already, that creates a tie. And in order to pass anything from a constitutional perspective, you need a majority of the available seats, which would be 102. And that has caused some struggles in terms of advancing many of the issues that the Democrats wish to push. We've offered time and time again to work in a reasonable bipartisan fashion on many of the topics that we think need addressed. But rather than come and do the hard work of legislating, many times session has simply not been scheduled.
We've had situations in the past where we've had narrow party control one way or another, and we've been able to get a lot of things done. What's different this time around?
Well, one of the struggles this time has been the high number of resignations, because when you start at 102, 101, and you have somebody or multiple people resign, you really end up with a very fluid majority. And that has caused some management problems in terms of both the calendar and the schedule. Additionally, I think when you look at the districts as they've been gerrymandered with the newest map, you've really created a house that will continue to be like this, most likely for the next 8 to 10 years. The reason I say that's because that was the stated purpose of the chair when they drew the lines. And while they do have a chamber that really was decided by essentially 61 votes in one district down in Montgomery County, that's what determined the control of the chamber. There's only about 12 or 15 seats that are nominally competitive. The inverse, or the other result of that, is that you've got 85 to 90 plus seats on both sides that are safe, and the incumbents only need to worry about a primary. That is not a healthy system for any kind of bipartisanship or problem solving. Previously, when we had other maps, you might have 30 or 40 seats on any election cycle that could be won by either party. And that really resulted, I think, in a better work product and a better working relationship.
We also seem to have seen more of a personal divide, if you will, that it mirrors to a large extent, Brian, what's happened in the electorate at large. There was a time when there was a little bit more camaraderie, even across the aisle. We don't see that too much anymore, do we?
No, we haven't. And I really think that many of the COVID restrictions are to blame for that. I know when I came in as a freshman, we did orientation together, and we would routinely go from event to event with one another, Republicans and Democrats. And the result of that was you got to know individuals. One of the examples that I typically use is my friend Bill Quartz, who helped me get my very first bill signed into law with Governor Ed Rendell. It was an issue that dealt with game laws and updating how the game commission worked. It really wasn't that complex, but through our shared stories, we learned that we both recognized a similar problem. And, you know, Bill was a steel worker from Allegheny County, and he was a Democrat. But we came in together and we became quick friends. And with the COVID restrictions and the lack of bipartisan orientation and events, you didn't have the last two classes of members going from event to event, learning about each other as people, learning about their families, learning about their children, learning about their lives and why they ran. Not having those relationships definitely put some strain on the legislative process because you don't have the personal relationships to fall back on. The other unintended consequence of that is I think that it's easier for members on both sides to be very negative towards one another because it's very easy to actively work against and say mean things about somebody who you really don't know. That all has contributed to that lack of bipartisanship, and it's certainly worrisome for years into the future, because when you look at the makeup of the House as it currently stands, more than half the body has been there less than 5 years, which means that more than half the body does not have the same experiences that I had previously. In fact, when I was sworn in as Speaker, then Judge Brandon Newman, who had been Representative Newman, who sat next to me on the House floor, was the judge who swore me in. We knew each other very well. You spend hours on the floor debating issues. And while we oftentimes would not vote the same way, we each earned one another's respect, and we continue to be friends until this day. And that's why when I came time to select a judge to swear me in, I chose Brandon, because I thought it was important to point out that those relationships do exist, that they are possible, and he's all around just been a great guy.
We are talking with House Republican Leader Brian Cutler, and as you just referenced, Brian, you have also served as Speaker of the House when Republicans were in a majority. So what changes would you recommend, have you recommended, should be made to try to get the House back on track and make it more productive?
Well, I'd start with scheduling additional days. That would certainly help. We're only scheduled for about another dozen days here throughout the end of the year. When you look at a traditional non-election year, it would not be uncommon to be in 80 to 100 plus days in that first year of the 2-year session. We're nowhere near that number currently. And as you head into the election cycle, the schedule typically limits, and that's going to be a challenge as we go forward now in terms of just the calendar dates, because the elections are on Tuesdays, so that wipes out entire weeks that you cannot be in session. So I'd start with scheduling more days. I'd also start with working with the chairman. This is something that I did both as leader and speaker when we were in the majority, that I would meet with the chairman and try to figure out the issues that they found important. And quite frankly, I empowered them. That's been another challenge that we had. We handled that last session. We had more than half of our committee chairs were new. And I know that the Democrats are in a similar position this cycle, just by virtue of the way that the seniority role kind of happens. And that's always a challenge, because you have to learn how to run a committee as well as learn the underlying topics that are contained in your committee. So I think it's always great to encourage those kinds of meetings. I'd also encourage members to get together. One of the things that I've been doing and trying to do is always meet with many of the new members. And that's something that I routinely did as speaker. I met with both Republican and Democrat. I'd meet with every new member because it was important for me to understand who they were and why they ran.
One of the areas of unfinished business is the budget. Of course, we have a major disagreement over the funding, particularly of the PASS, previously known as the Lifeline Scholarship Program. What do you see happening with getting the remaining components of enabling the budget put in place?
Well, there's really several components to the budget, as you alluded to in your question there, Loman. The first one is really what most people focus on is the budget, and that's just the numbers bill. That's how much money are we spending and in which areas. So when you look at those areas, that's one piece in and of itself. The next piece is kind of what I call the financial instruction manual or the fiscal code. That's really the directions that could be formulas on which counties get how much money and what that looks like. That is not passed through the legislative process yet. That has passed the Senate, and we have yet to bring that up in the House, and it's my hope that the House Democrats would call that up very soon, because ultimately it's the majority leader who runs the calendar and determines which bills are considered on which day. And then you have a whole host of other bill changes as well. For example, you've got the Education Code, which will deal with many components of education funding. You've got the Human Services Code, which will fund social service programs, and many of the counties are counting on that money. And in cases where the formulas are in statute already, that money could be distributed. Where the argument is going to really come up and where the process is going to break down is by not having the fiscal code done, that will cause problems with any new monies and any new programs. And you're going to really put the treasurer in a position where even if the governor requests the money, the treasurer is going to have to review and see what the law says and the Constitution says. And if it's not essential for the public health, safety, and welfare of the Commonwealth, it needs to wait until the fiscal code is done. That's why it's so vitally important that we return and complete that process.
The Lifeline Scholarship Program pass has been a top priority of the state Senate here, Brian. Is that something House Republicans are also going to fight for as we finish this process?
Yes, I led the fight in the Rules Committee, which is where they ultimately killed the bill that the Senate came over. And we also had passed a similar program last session called Lifeline Scholarships. It was really just a slightly different way to really achieve the same goal, which was to give educational opportunities to people in underperforming and underprivileged schools. Many times you'll hear some advocates simply say that more money is the solution. But it's important to recognize that that is not what the court said in their opinion. While they had concerns with the process by which schools are funded, what they did not say, and in fact they went out of their way to point out the opposite, they said money alone is not the only solution. And I think one of the very simple reasons for that is this. It doesn't matter how much money goes into the system, you're not going to see immediate change. So if you can simultaneously support the existing system as well as support other options for those students who cannot afford to wait, because we only get one crack at educating our students K through 12.
We have been talking with House Republican Leader Brian Cutler. He represents the 100th Legislative District, that in Lancaster County. And Brian, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about the various topics that we've discussed today, perhaps contact your office, how can they do that?
Absolutely. There's many ways to contact me. You can go to www.repcutler.com. Just go to repcutler.com, hit the contact me button. That actually comes into our email box. I personally see my own emails. It's one of the ways that I try to stay in contact. We also have our Harrisburg number is 717-783-6424. And you know, we'll be happy to return your call.
State House Republican leader Brian Cutler. Brian, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Lemon.
Providing foster care, adoption, and post-permanency services is the mission of Concern for Kids. To learn more about the organization and what it has to offer, Joe Geiger has Concern for Kids President and CEO Gordon May in the Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Lemon, and thank you, Gordon, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program today. Gordon, share what the mission statement is for your organization, which is Concern for Kids, if you will.
Concern's mission is to bring hope, offer opportunity, and inspire change. And our vision is to encourage growth and promote positive, healthy lives.
And how long have you been around?
I've been with Concern right coming up in October. I think we'll be 7 years.
And the organization, as I understand it, is somewhere around 50 years?
Yeah, 45 years. Actually, we're celebrating our 45th anniversary in November. We're planning an event. Pretty excited about it.
So with that vision and that mission in mind, talk to our listeners a little bit about what are the services that go along with that to make that happen.
We provide foster care service, adoptions. We do around 40 adoptions annually, which is pretty amazing. We have a foster care program that has currently around 150 kids in foster care with approximately 200 foster parents. We do behavioral health services, which include outpatient services, mental health, psychiatrist, psychology, therapy, and some community-based service as well. And we have one residential treatment facility, and I think I said community-based services also.
How are the children funneled to you for the services you provide?
We take referrals from anywhere, so you can come, you know, you get on our website. We take self-referrals. We also have great relationships with school districts and counties. So we get referrals for our services from a multitude of different places.
Where are you located, and what's your service area?
So we're actually, I wouldn't say we're large, but we're all through Pennsylvania, up northeast Pennsylvania, down into Maryland. So our corporate office is in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania, Reading area. And then we have about 16 offices now going the whole way up to Mansfield, Wellsboro area, and then far south in Lanham, Maryland, which is around Prince George County.
As you approach each day, what do you see as your biggest challenge in working with this population?
I think the challenge now is finding good people, just like everybody else. Hiring is really difficult in finding foster parents. There's so many kids in care that are looking for foster homes, and we just don't have enough homes. So we're constantly recruiting foster parents, and it's so important. So if you want to be a foster parent, please reach out to Concern. Look at our website. There's a way to contact us. That would be great. So that's really right now from operations is really finding people to work. And then obviously the mental health crisis in the country related to how people have been struggling getting out of COVID and just overall mental health. Even before COVID and everything, we were in a crisis or a crunch for staff, and really COVID just really exacerbated that in the human service behavioral health field. It was bad going in, and it just made it worse.
What are the credentials you look for in a young person to hire them?
Well, we have different positions, which is essentially we have direct service providers, right? And depending on the type of program, require a different background. So we have some staff that are paraprofessionals that really just need a high school diploma or GED to provide some service. And then we have a service that's more skilled, expert-based, where we have like a licensure for a mental health, a licensed social worker, licensed professional counsel. And then we have licensed psychologists and licensed psychiatrists as well.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio program. My guest today is Gordon May, president and CEO of an organization named Concern for Kids throughout Pennsylvania down into northern Maryland. Gordon, what's the budget size of your organization?
We're around $22 million annually in revenue. We probably have about 375 employees and 180 full-time employees right now.
So that's a pretty good chunk of change. And with the economy being what it is, it's also got to be challenging to do the fundraising to that target.
Yeah, definitely. We have contracts with county government. We have managed care organizations, Medicaid, and then we also do ask and do some fundraisers and raise money annually.
If you could just walk in one day and say, I've got this magic wand, what would it be?
Oh, my. that's a good one. Well, one, I would want to pay my staff more. You know, the work is so hard. And I think to recruit and find the staff to do such difficult work, just to increase what we're paid to provide a service and be able to pay our staff more than we currently do. We're constantly trying to do that. I think that would help attract people and help the people provide the service that's needed. So that would be one thing that jumps right out at me.
The thing that I always think about when working with special needs populations is the burnout rate, too, of staff. And how do you keep people energized and motivated to work once you have them?
We actually focus on that a lot at Concern. We have a wellness initiative. It's baked into our strategic plan. So we're constantly trying to do things to take care of our staff, check in, make sure everybody's doing all right, and really promote self-care as an agency. And we talk about it a lot. So I totally agree, and I've seen it. And we really promote taking your PTO and doing things at work in support of one another.
At the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference?
We have Meet the Mission and Mission Moments. We've just started doing that because exactly what you said, it's so hard. So we do have success stories, and we try to highlight those as best we can. I just did one at the board meeting, and we do have incidences where our staff, our foster parents are really making a difference in people's lives. So we really try to highlight the wins and say, hey, you know, listen, we have some difficult things. We see some horrible things, but we also have some really positive moments where our staff do amazing things for the people we serve.
Why don't you share one of your wins with our listeners?
I guess the most recent one that comes to mind, we had, and I'll do the short version. We had a kid that was bouncing around foster care. His parents were abusive, neglecting him, and he didn't really want to leave his parents and kept trying, but his parents kept not coming through. And then he eventually saw that, hey, this wasn't going to work, and he's no longer going to be with his parents. He found a foster home. He's been with Concern a couple years now, doing great, and the family's going to legally adopt him, and he's been very successful. But he had a rough 3 years of going through the back and forth and trying to get back with his parents, and his parents not doing what they're supposed to do and using drugs, and then him seeing that and then him being successful and our staff working with him. So it really was a great story, and it's nice to hear that the kiddo's doing extremely well right now.
That's terrific. And then you look at the thousands of kids that you're working with in foster homes. He times it by that, and I can see where it would be motivating. At the beginning of the interview, you said you have an event coming up.
Yes, November 10th, we have our 45th anniversary. If you go onto our website, you can donate to support the event. We have a silent auction, and I'm really looking forward to it. A lot of planning's gone into it, it should be great.
Gordon, if somebody listening to the program would like to donate money to your cause or volunteer, how can they find you?
If you look on the online at concern4kids.org, there's a donate button. You can read all about us. We take volunteers. So if you go to the website, you should be able to find us and donate or volunteer.
Thank you, Gordon, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program, and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Back to you, Loman.
Roadblocks to out-of-state healthcare providers lifted during the COVID pandemic are now back in place, and the result is a shortage of healthcare providers. Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
72% of Pennsylvania's 67 counties are defined by the Center for Rural Pennsylvania as being rural, meaning that 48 counties in PA make up 3.4 million of the state's 13 million total population. Only 19 counties in Pennsylvania make up 3/4 of the state's total population, leaving the rest of Pennsylvanians to determine how to get to highly dense urban areas for educational opportunities, urban entertainment options, and, very importantly, highly sought-after healthcare practitioners. Healthcare is undoubtedly a highly personal matter. Your health is too delicate of a matter to leave to government bureaucrats to determine whether you can or cannot receive the best care. Most importantly, regional constraints should not stand in the way of your ability to receive the care that is best suited for you and your personal needs. The COVID pandemic of 2020 taught our society many lessons, and one remains true to this day. Laws that are waived during a global pandemic are not necessarily laws that should remain on the books. In an effort to address statewide healthcare shortages in the face of the COVID crisis, Governor Tom Wolf announced on March 6, 2020, that out-of-state healthcare practitioners in good standing may practice telemedicine in Pennsylvania without obtaining a license to practice specifically in Pennsylvania. According to a Right to Know request filed by Americans for Prosperity Foundation's investigations analyst, Thomas Kimbrell, and released in a blog post this week, former Governor Wolf's unprecedented waiver of licensing requirements allowed hundreds of practitioners to address critical healthcare shortages in the state. However, this waiver expired last October, and as a result, Pennsylvanians are facing a grave shortage in healthcare practitioner vacancies. According to the Hospital and Health System Association of Pennsylvania, the vacancy rate for registered nurses in Pennsylvania increased 10.2% between 2019 and 2022, showing a stark downturn in healthcare retention rates. What the Wolf administration's actions towards telehealth showed Pennsylvanians is that when government gets out of the way, access to quality healthcare increases exponentially, as in, access to hundreds of qualified practitioners. Bureaucratic red tape, such as licensing requirements for out-of-state practitioners, or barriers to insurance reimbursement for telehealth practices, keep healthcare consumers from booking quality consultations with their doctors at the touch of a button. The numbers speak for themselves. According to polling conducted by Americans for Prosperity PA in May of this year, 68% of 700 surveyed Pennsylvanians believe that healthcare is personal, and thus the consumer should have more choice in their care options. A clear majority of Pennsylvanians believe that top-down, government-run healthcare is bad for consumers and bad healthcare practice. We know that there's a better way. The personal option to healthcare. It's 2023. You can customize anything in your life, from the way that you shop for your groceries, to the music you listen to the car that you drive off the lot. Why can't you customize your healthcare? Telemedicine options are a fantastic way for rural Pennsylvanians, working mothers, and those with jam-packed schedules to seek healthcare consultations that meet their needs. Through the Personal Option campaign, we can achieve better healthcare outcomes, so long as choice and flexibility are at the forefront of our advocacy. Learn more today and sign your name to our growing list of free market healthcare supporters at personaloptionpa.com. Sign your name to our petition, get involved today, and help us pave the way for a customizable approach to care that puts you, the consumer, in the driver's seat. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMBS AM and FM in Uniontown, along with WEMR FM and WBHV FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.